Thursday, January 26th, began early in the suite at the Carlisle. I caught the 9 o'clock shuttle back to Washington, just in time to go to my Spanish class, which is quite reduced these days. June and I are the most faithful members. It is my personal self-indulgence, not disciplined enough to learn much, and practically no study in between the 2 hours per week. Then to Mr. Pears for a quick hair comb, and back to the White House to dress for our luncheon for the President-elect of Brazil and Mrs. Costa e Silva. Just a few minutes before they were coming, when I was all dressed, Bess came in to show me a beautiful aquamarine pen, their gift to me. Quickly I scurried through the closet looking for something that would be just the right background for the pen, and came up with my blue Alaskan dress by Marquise that I think is spring of 65. Tucked the pen back in its box, and emerged to meet the President-elect and Mrs. Costa e Silva, the DeCunhas and the Humphreys, and Arthur Goldberg, and Nick Katzenbach in Russ's absence. Busk is in Texas, in the Yellow Room for drinks and an exchange of gifts. For them, we had an Accutron desk clock, engraved a set of Carl Sandburg books on Abraham Lincoln, and the always most imaginative gift, a picture of their country made from a satellite way out in space. And for Mrs. Costa e Silva, an antique mahogany Chippendale tea caddy dated from the beginning of our country, about 1780. And then I was appropriately surprised when they brought forth a beautiful aquamarine for me and began pinning it on just as the color guard arrived to remove the flags. Never do it again. Lyndon and the President moved off inexorably while I fumbled and stabbed and finally wound up with it probably upside down. We had about 136 guests, the Whizzer Whites from the court, the Fowlers and the Weavers from the cabinet, Senator Wayne Morse, acting remarkably affable, the one who cuts our throat every day, George Aiken in his red tie. Somehow, for me, he just fits the delightful state of Vermont that he represents. Brand new governor of Maryland and Mrs. Agnew. I believe their inaugural is this weekend. Saul Linowitz, our ambassador to OAS. Several staff members. MacPherson's and Rostow's and Watson's. The hardest man on our staff to get to come to a party. Two bright new ones, Larry Levinson's and Irvin Duggan. And two astronauts who have been to Brazil, the Neil Armstrongs and the Richard Gordons. And from the University of Texas, there was Professor John W. Foster Dulles, son of the former Secretary of State, and quite an authority on the history of South America, recently returned from Brazil. And Dr. and Mrs. Fred Ellison, he's head of the Portuguese Language Center at the university. And also from Texas, our friend of many years, Walter Hall, that contradiction, a banker and an articulate liberal. From the arts, there was Jimmalou Mason and Dr. and Mrs. Howard Mitchell. The President-elect was a heavy-set, affable but authoritative-looking man, mustached, sure of himself, quite masculine. I liked him. We talked about Brasilia and its progress in the few years of its life. He told me, to my surprise, the site had been chosen in 1889 when the Republic began, and that it was a deliberate effort to try to move inward, a center of population, a focus of power and interest. He likened it to the waves of westward pioneers in our country. Trudy Fowler, on his other side, is a dependable conversationist. And pretty little Mrs. Linowitz, side Ambassador DeCunha, helped keep the table moving, but I cannot say it was the liveliest luncheon we've ever had. Mike Mansfield was completely silent and withdrawn. Lennon's toast was quite good. He quoted Thomas Jefferson to welcome his guest of honor. In a few weeks, he'll be inaugurated in March, to the splendid misery of being a national leader. And the guests relaxed in laughter. The assurance that our people seek, he said, is not that we make no mistakes, but that we shall never really tire of seeking education and better health and better housing and so forth. President Costa e Silva told me that he'd been making a tour some 8 or 9 countries between the time he was elected and the time he'll be sworn in. Very tiring and very necessary, he said. He seemed a tough and stable man. For the leader of a country so big, it was a rather underplayed hospitality, but I suppose that is the difference between being president-elect and president in office. We started to escort them to the front portico a little before 3, and then I got a jolt. Mrs. DeCunha came up to me. She's a fine, drawn, thin, elegant lady. And with her, she had another guest who looked so exactly like her that my face must have been a study in surprise. She burst into laughter and said, "My twin sister, she does look just like me, doesn't she?" And I was very much relieved that I wasn't seeing double. We said goodbye on the front portico, and then I hurried back in because I wanted to ask the Dullies and the Ellisons and Halls if I could find them, and the two astronauts if they would like to have a quiet tour of the Lincoln Room and the Queen Room. I gathered up 6 of them and found a guide and got them dispatched, and then had a little rest, time enough to go over the business of the next engagement, which was an important one to me. 46 mayors, the executive committee of the U.S. Conference of Mayors, were meeting in Washington, and I'd asked them to come for tea at 4:30. Tell me what was going on back home in the field of beautification and conservation. I was at the door of the diplomatic reception room to meet them at 4:30, and here they were marching up the driveway shoulder to shoulder, John Collins in his wheelchair, mayor of Boston, in the vanguard. I hurried out to greet him. Hubert Humphrey, who had been their luncheon host and had been conducting an afternoon meeting with them, escorted them to the White House. Secretary Weaver of HUD accompanied them. There were many I had met in their hometowns. Mayor Ivan Allen of Atlanta, Thomas Kerrigan of Denver, where we'd had such a delightful visit last fall, and Bouncy Herman Golner of St. Petersburg, and Richard Lee of New Haven, who'd given me an unforgettable tour of his city and his accomplishments of the 12 years he's been mayor, and Roy Martin of Norfolk, Virginia, who spoke glowingly of the 2 azalea queens in our family, and Mayor James Tate of Philadelphia, often my host there. Surprisingly, there were 3 mayors from Alabama, Tuscaloosa and Gadsden and Mobile. We reminisced about the delightful fire station I dedicated, but most of the mayors were from large towns. There were pictures outside, but once inside, it was informal and cozy, no press, with tea and coffee in the Blue Room, which did not prove as popular as the drinks, which were passed by a few minutes later. And then we drifted into the Red Room, crowded, but it's a good room for getting a talk going. And I said a word of welcome, and then Jerry Cavanaugh took over as a sort of moderator, in a most informal manner, to just call on about 5 of the mayors to speak of what was happening in their hometowns. First, there was slim, attractive John Lindsay, with whom I'd been dancing just the night before. His is the stormiest problem city in all the United States, I'm sure. And also, his was just about the ablest presentation. Fountains were one of his objectives, now that the water crisis was over. And then Mayor Cervantes of St. Louis told us about the Great Arch, a monument to their city's century and a half of life. And I believe it was he who said that the city had for the first time undertaken to sweep its alleys. Much of the conversation was on increased budgets, of course, and lots of it for cleaning up. What could be more basic? One mayor said that their budget for trash collection and cleaning had tripled in the last 2 years. In all, there were 5 mayors who talked. One of them said quite forthrightly that if you had said 5 years ago that any mayor knew or cared anything about beautification, you would have been crazy. But now a good many of them were finding out that it was good business and good politics. I believe it was Mayor Fred Fugazi of Lexington, Kentucky. Mayor Allen of Atlanta gave the impression of being very able, but I suppose it was Richard Lee of New Haven who seemed most professional of them all. Said the word design had become part of city administration. Actually, the word design threaded through the whole evening, concerning street furniture, overall planning, freeways, green belts for the future. The vocabulary, the horizons, do seem to be changing. On the anvil of necessity, there's a sense of boldness. It's an interesting time to watch what's happening. And then, just as the 3rd or 4th mayor had finished, there was a slight ripple of noise, and there was Lyndon at the door. He came walking in and took a seat and listened until the last one finished, and then he began to talk, and that was the show of the day. He was blunt and tough. If the cities had problems, if they needed massive help, it was up to them to help get the votes in Congress to get it. I do not have enough horsepower. I can get 3 votes in the Texas delegation. If your constituencies want model cities, they must express themselves. I told about how the bill passed last year with all the steam behind it that he and the whole administration could muster. Just by an eyelash. Nobody needs to be told about the different climate of this year's Congress. But if it's their problem, the mayor's, if they think the cities need work on air pollution and water pollution and open spaces and help in the ghettos, they'd better get busy with the only folks that can make it happen, the Congress. I wish we had had a tape recorder. He was wonderful. And I felt very proud because, in a way, he was doing it for me. But it started out to be tea and thank you, mildly put by a timid first lady, had turned out to be a fairly substantive meeting. A little after 6, he shook hands and everybody rose. The guests quickly melted away. There was that feeling of excitement in the air. I sensed that it had been a good meeting. I went upstairs and worked on the mail. I had a plate of hors d'oeuvres and some gin and tonic, which I hadn't had during the meeting. And then I felt very weary. I had tried my best to put out all day long. And so I had a massage, a long one, while I watched a good show on TV, The Acme of Luxury, and phoned Lyndon that I was going to bed and I hope he would bring somebody home to keep him company at dinner. He did, Tom Johnson and Jim Jones and Mary Margaret, but by that time I was curled up in bed and ready for sleep.